The Johnson Wax Program. The makers of Johnson's Wax, Johnson's self-polishing glow coat, and Johnson's Car New present the brilliant conductor-composer of melody, Meredith Wilson, and MGM's noted young commentator star and teller of amazing tales, John Nesbitt. Ladies and gentlemen, this program, in the words of John Nesbitt and the music of Meredith Wilson, with songs by Connie Haynes and Bob Carroll, is sent to you by S.C. Johnson & Son, makers of Johnson's wax finishes for home and industry. And now here are Meredith Wilson and John Nesbitt. John Nesbitt has been behaving very strangely about his story for tonight, telling us when we asked him about it, only that it would curl our hair. Period. And Meredith spent nearly all of his weekend scoring some ultra-dramatic music for the tale. So our curiosity is really boiling this evening. But John, what is this mysterious story about?
Harlow, it will curl your hair, period.
Meredith, has he been behaving like that for long?
He certainly has, Harlow, muttering mysteriously to himself and stuffing his pockets with clippings from old newspapers. At any rate, since John has been playing Dracula and curling people's hair, period, I decided, for contrast, to keep the music cheerful and melodious, beginning like this with a straightforward march.
Which, incidentally, is called Wings on High and was written by Meredith Wilson. And Bob Carroll will sing the words.
From the air, a million wings on high, to do or die, so give her the gun, my boy, give her the gun.
Of lost music, the songs that should have been hits but for unknown reasons never had a chance. Meredith searches out one of these each week, and John tries to trace the story.
Why, the joker this week is that there's no story at all. This ballad called The Mood That I'm In was considered one of the best numbers that Silver and Sherman ever wrote. It was presented by big orchestras, given all kinds of publicity, and the musical experts wildly raved over it. Yet it dropped out of sight almost at once. And hence into our lost music department tonight. Connie Haynes sings the lyrics of The Mood That I'm In. And Connie really sings this one. In fact, you'll curl your hair, period.
never dared to have your arms around me. Not that I considered it a sin, but tonight I want your arms around me. It's the mood that I'm in. Can it be the music that they're playing, or the magic of the violin that intrigues my heart into obeying? It's the mood that I'm in. Maybe it's the lovely things you tell me that help to put me in this frame of mind. Maybe it's your eyes that overwhelm me. Tonight I'm so romantically inclined. So speak to me of love with words so tender. Let the rhapsody of life begin. I could give my heart in sweet surrender. It's the mood that I'm in.
So another lost song is given a chance to find friends and perhaps a success it would never have known. But Harlow Wilcox is here for a moment to speak about the products that have won outstanding success for many a year.
Of all the things you own, your car probably gets the hardest use. Sits outside in the broiling sun or a driving blizzard. Gets covered with dust, road scum, bugs, and tree sap. No wonder the finish needs a little care if you expect it to last. Have you ever tried cleaning and polishing it with Johnson's Car New? That's the easiest way I know to keep it looking its best and to remove the scum and bugs that will definitely damage the finish if you don't get them off. Car New is a real labor saver because it does two jobs at once, both cleans and polishes with one application. It restores your car's original showroom shine with a minimum of effort, and it costs very little. And everybody knows it's more fun driving a car that's new looking. Then, for a little extra work, you can give the finish added protection and save on car washings by applying a coat of Johnson's Auto Wax or the regular Johnson's Wax. But don't delay. Buy a package of Johnson's Car New this week. It's spelled C-A-R-N-U. And here is one of the amazing true stories which have brought fame to John Nesbitt. Beyond telling us that it would curl our hair, period, he explained that for almost 10 years he has been collecting the facts of this story. So here is another chapter of John Nesbitt's Passing Parade.
A pile of personal letters written by people living near Montreal, Canada. 3 clippings from Time magazine, several paragraphs from the Old Literary Digest, the court records of an English trial for treason. These are the clues which pieced together have produced the story of one of the most incredible human beings alive in the world today. We begin with the year 1879 in a tiny Hungarian village on the banks of the Danube. In the home of a wealthy, honored grain merchant is born a son. Much rejoicing, a festival week for the entire town. The merchant christened his son with the name Ignatz, Ignatz Trebitsch. The child became the pride of the village, not merely because he was heir apparent to the richest man, but because he was brilliant, a prodigy, had a strange gift of eloquence, a beautiful voice. And in addition, he had the courage of a Cossack chief. Growing up in a luxurious home among gentle people, he had every opportunity. Ahead of him lay any career that love and money could offer. But inside this boy were growing, burning, peculiar talents. On his 17th birthday, these talents exploded. Silver-tongued young Ignatz rich man's son, disappeared. His father and mother, I believe, never saw him again. Now it is the year 1900. In Montreal, Canada, a handsome, beautifully mannered young man appears in society. His name is Dr. T. Lincoln, and in 6 months, social leaders in Montreal are fighting for the honor of entertaining him. He appears to be some sort of a religious worker, and night and day he works, gathering donations for his cause. Then, quite suddenly, the donations and the man who gathered them are gone. The parish never meets this man again, but the people will say to you today, when he talked and looked at you with his blazing eyes, you would agree to anything. It was years before anyone there knew that the T in Dr. Lincoln's name stood for a family name honored throughout Europe, Trebitsch. But in this case, it will come to mean disaster. We are now in London. It is 1906. And a candidate for the English Parliament has appeared, and the day comes when he rises in a great hall and speaks, and for 60 minutes there is utter silence as one of the great orators of our time holds the listeners in his power, and the next day, under the name Timothy T. Lincoln, he is elected by an overwhelming majority, and this man actually goes to govern England in Parliament itself. Again, no one knows what the T in his name refers to, except the man. And we know it stands for Trebitsch, disaster. For half a dozen years of honor and service, this superb master of speech holds his position. He is a good representative. He's a valuable statesman. His record is spotless. When in 1914 the threat of war comes to bind every leader, heart and soul, to the service of England, he is so valuable that he's made one of the key figures in negotiations with Germany. Working day and night, he travels back and forth between London and Berlin. He now speaks half a dozen languages. He dresses magnificently. He smiles modestly when his friends predict that one day he will rise to the cabinet itself. But one night, the Scotland Yard report goes to the Prime Minister. Timothy T. Lincoln, Member of Parliament, to be arrested at once. He is a German spy. But no one is arrested. There is no Timothy T. Lincoln, MP. He is gone. And as always, the cause he is accused of serving, that of Germany, will pale. It is now 1915. Out of his office in the United States Secret Service Department steps an expert criminologist. This is in the city of Washington. He is considered one of the ablest men of our wartime force. He holds the confidence of our government. But a Scotland Yard man waits at his door, and in the person of the American Secret Service agent, he takes Trebitsch Lincoln off to jail, the same man. Two nights later, he's locked up in the New York City jail within 3 hours, has escaped and laughed his way into the unknown. It is now 1916. In a British penitentiary sits an obscure prisoner. His number is 77436. For 3 years under the prison uniform sits Trebitsch. Then, with the war ended, England sweeps out its military prisons, and number 77436 is deported to the continent, to Germany. In 1920, a revolution rages there. It is led by able, powerful men. But that revolt of 1920 goes down in your history books as a failure, for at the last minute a traitor appears. A tall, beak-nosed, brilliant-eyed man with a wonderful voice. Herr Dr. Trebitsch Lincoln. Trebitsch. Disaster, and the cause he worked for fails. He'd sold out his friends and has always disappeared. And on goes this twisting trail. 1922, we pick him up in China. His name is now Tolnoy. And he is advisor to a bandit chief. The bandit comes to disaster and Tolnoy disappears. As a shaven-headed monk named Albert K.O.T. Kung, Abbot K.O.T. Kung, he appears in India in 1925, sweeps up a fortune in Indian gold, and like an actor stepping out of sight in the wings, he's suddenly gone. And the cause he serves ends and fits. Now that, for many years, was the last I could find of this man. As far as my research was concerned, he was really gone at last, perhaps dead. But not long ago, word came through on a national news wire that he'd emerged from the shadows. That in a distant city there walks today a great holy man wearing the robes of a monk, his name being Kao Ti Kung. Dark-faced, oriental, heavily scarred. But he is the white man, Timothy T. Lincoln. Ignatz Trebitsch, Dr. Lincoln, Member of Parliament, accused German spy, Christian priest, millionaire, revolutionist, beggar, and number in a prison cell. And those whom he now serves are perhaps proud and triumphant at possessing such a brilliant man. This pious old worker, wearing the cloth of a Buddhist monk, the shaven head, the body covered with scars now, the eyes flaming and the voice like silver. Yes, they may be proud and triumphant whom he serves. If they do not know that he's been cursed eternally with disaster, that every cause he embraces has collapsed and died, as will their cause. For Trebitsch was last seen in the Orient, rumored an advisor to the Emperor of Japan. And he now preaches for the cause of modern Nippon, and he cries everywhere, "Forward Japan!" They're welcome to Trebitsch. For with him he brings disaster. But he remains a strange, twisted genius of the world's passing parade.
And now that John Nesbitt has curled our hair just as he promised, here for a change of pace is another of the combinations of many melodies which Meredith Wilson takes from the highways and byways of America. And as usual, we ask Meredith to be his own footnote.
Well, as a footnote to this music, and by the way, it's an odd feeling being a footnote, I can only append the following facts, that these are the tunes of plain American people. Some of them are generations old, like the one Connie and Bob are doing as a duet. And other people are still dancing, too, during these summer evenings. But they have this in common, that they're all simple. Simple as an old oaken bucket. And no one calls them classic music. Yet from them, I believe that many a melody may survive to become one of the folk songs of tomorrow. And that is why we call these medleys America Sings.
Thank you.
paper doll that I can call my own. A doll that other fellows cannot steal. And then the flirty, flirty guys with their flirty, flirty eyes will have to flirt with dollies that are real. When I come home at night, she will be waiting. She'll be the truest doll in all this world. I'd rather have a paper doll to call my own than have a fickle-minded, real-life girl. Connections with the old Sioux line.
And then the old Sioux line keeps to the rail, trying to make connections with the Royal Mail. The Royal Mail trying to see the actress from Topeka and the Santa Fe.
And then the Santa Fe, nothing slow, trying to keep up with the B&O. B&O runs like a fountain, trying to make connections with the Iron Mountain.
And then the Iron Mountain is really terrific, trying to keep up with the Southern Pacific. The old SP running like well, trying to make connections with the M and St. L.
And then the M and St. L, I must confess, trying to keep up with the Hartford Express. The Hartford Express going insane, trying to make connections with the Boston and Maine.
And then the Boston and Maine, see you tomorrow. Trying to make connections with the cannonball, round and fine. Trying to make connections with that old gal of
from John Nesbitt in a moment. And right now, a comment from the Johnson people. In a government bulletin I was reading some time ago, I came across the statement, dirt wears things out. Now, I don't suppose the mother of an 8-year-old boy could use that as an argument for neck washing, but it's an awfully good argument for good housekeeping. If you looked at particles of dirt through a microscope, you'd think they were sharp pieces of coal or rock, and you'd realize how important it is to protect your floors, furniture, and woodwork with a tough coat of wax, genuine Johnson's wax. Dust and dirt just can't get a foothold on a properly waxed surface. The wax itself takes all the punishment and can be renewed when necessary. I've often thought how fortunate it is that Johnson's wax, which gives this protection, also adds such great beauty to floors, tabletops, and chairs, brings out all the natural beauty of the wood. There are over 100 labor-saving uses for Johnson's wax in your home. It's now available in three forms, paste, liquid, and cream.
Word has come through that the armed forces face a critical shortage of medical officers. The young Americans whose bodies are being broken in the war appeal to you who are doctors from 1,000 understaffed military hospitals. They appeal to you to give them the work of your trained hands, the long years of study that made you a doctor. As an individual, you may sacrifice a great deal to become a medical officer, but as a scientist, you receive the priceless reward. And from your hands, the youths of our country may receive back their lives. If you are a doctor, please volunteer at once to the Surgeon General in Washington, D.C., or your nearest recruiting center. You are needed. You are needed. Time is up, so until with Meredith Wilson, Connie Haynes, Bob Carroll, and Harlow Wilcox, we join you again a week from tonight. This is John Nesbitt bidding a very good evening to you all.
Speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax Finishes for Home and Industry, this is Harlow Wilcox, inviting you all to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night. This program has reached you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
This is Chicago, WMAQ.